Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Infinity Cafe. You can see that I've got a this isn't really to do advertising or anything, this banner thing. It's just that I did it this week and I wanted to share with you something creative I've done this week to show you that I'm making efforts. As ever, my objective is to inspire you to move forward from wherever you are by showing you that I'm trying to do the same thing. Having said that, I quite like it actually, Infinity Coaching, kind of cool. I should think it's kind of cool, otherwise I shouldn't have made it, should I? It says, it's a street photograph of mine. It says, ici on recherche les humains. If you can see this this guy here, he was passing this church, and this church had this banner that they'd created with these batteries getting more and more charged. And they said, here, we recharge humans, on the side of this church. And this was brilliant. I thought it was great. And but in street photography, I try never to just take a picture of somebody else's creation. You need to add something. So I needed somebody. So I wait for someone to go past. And I had a few people going past. And there was this one guy who went past, and he had a face like this. Mm. His lips literally went down like that. And I thought, perfect. He needs recharging, if anyone does. The words I've used below it here says reflect, explore, and advance in French. We could talk about that later. I may have made a mistake in this one and in another one that I did. We'll see. Anyway, welcome to the cafe, Infinity Cafe. I've got my coffee. I think this is the fifth one I'm doing. And I'm able to talk for an hour, strangely. But ideally, I would like to be talking to other people, not just myself. So if you're watching the replay, do tell people that this thing exists. And if you like it, tell them that it's worth coming along. And you can come along live as well. It's either, so far it's been on a Saturday or a Sunday. Next week it's on a Sunday. And I'll show you what I offer. I offer moments of me drinking coffee like this. Showing my heritage is showing there, you see, although I was born in Scotland. Nearly spilt it all. And if I share the screen, you should be able to see what I can see, which is this. A week on planet Earth. I tell you something that's happened to me this week. Never just me talking about me. It's me talking about things that have happened to me, which I hope have lessons in them for all of us. For all of us, everybody. A Paris metaphor. I'm writing a book which will be something along the lines of Paris as a metaphor for life, the universe, and everything. I just made that up. And I'll use metaphors linked to Paris, which illustrate various aspects of life as seen and experienced by me, of course. Thought provokers. This is normally a book or something published, which I've discovered or I'm reading and I'll share with you, which I think is worth sharing. A creative selection, number four, is a look at what I've created this week. And because I create things which I hope stimulate conversation or thought, it's not just looking at pretty pictures. We can discuss the ideas therein. And quirks and curiosities, wait and see. Questions and replies. I started calling this questions and answers, but I realized that I wasn't giving answers. I was asking more questions, if anything. So if you've got questions, we can discuss it, but don't expect solutions unless you find them yourself, which may well happen. And number seven, I might get rid of number seven. It was really to say there are parts of this, anything could happen, I have no idea. The first part I'm going to talk about is this. This is in French, so I have to do these little cards in English as well. This says 1 week on Earth. You see, I spent a lot of time doing that drawing. So a couple of things happened to me this week that I wanted to share. One is I created a new Facebook group. Well, I created a new Facebook page for Infinity Coaching. And I created a group to go with it. First of all, I created a Facebook group, which was literally just the Infinity Coaching Facebook group. Nothing special over and above the fact that, you know, Infinity Coaching, amazing, just amazing, amazing name, amazing. But I had this idea that came to me, an irreverent idea for me, self-development has to be both profound and funny. It pretty much comes down to that. And so I wanted to create a group that wasn't like the others. There was this one group I belonged to, okay, in sort of development and stuff and spirituality, blah, blah, blah. There's lots of groups. Most of them are heavily spiritual, you know. And one thing that annoys me about personal development, spirituality and that, they seem to have had their sense of humor surgically removed. So I wanted to create a group which did talk about the deep stuff, but which also was able to not take itself too seriously. I started seeing a lot of people who were doing self-development courses, and immediately after, or even during the self-development course, they kind of self-transmogrified into a wannabe self-help guru. It's like they thought, okay, I've got this. I'm going to start getting my message out there, guys. And they started like a speaking course. I shouldn't say this, actually. Anyway, a speaking course I was on. Pretty quickly, some people realized that what they wanted to do was to inspire other people, not in a particular small area where they themselves had a problem with, but, you know, life in general. They wanted to become what I kind of facetiously call a self-help guru. For one thing, I don't believe in self-help. Self-help implies that you've got a problem and that you need help. And I'm moving towards not believing that. I'm moving towards thinking that we have no problem whatsoever. We're fine as we are. But the self-help industry, I'm not saying self-development, it's not quite the same thing. The self-help industry, like the pharmaceutical industry, thrives on the fact that so many people think they're sick. Well, the self-help industry is the same. So many people think they've got problems, and these ideas and beliefs are fueled by the self-help industry, that they look for solutions. They think they lack confidence. They think they're no good at art. They think they could never be a good speaker. You know, all of these things they think they're useless at, or even as a person, I think I'm a bad person. Nobody loves me. But don't worry, there's a book for that, or there's a course for that, or there's a webinar for that, it's a free webinar, but it will lead you on to a 10-part course at a very reasonable rate just this week. Thank you for watching this webinar. And it's all built on slamming home this fact that we are no good. We are broken, as you sometimes hear some people say. You're not broken. You're okay. You're fine. You just got to realize that. And that's kind of the theme for today. So I started off this Facebook group, I'll show you it, and it's called, let me share my screen with you. If I share the screen, what happens? Hopefully you get that list of what we're doing, and then hopefully you see this change. Let's zoom, let's get rid of that. And so this is the page for the group, the page, where I publish loads of stuff, but it's not so communicative. And then the communicative place where I put the same stuff, but it's a group, is called the Wannabe Self-Help Guru Recovery Forum. Yeah. So I'm kind of making fun of myself. You know, I had those sort of delusions of grandeur. I thought, oh, this is it. I'm going to be the next self-help guru. And then I thought, no, you're not. You might be able to help people. You might have some interesting stuff to share, but you're not going to be a self-help guru. For a start, people aren't broken. They're fine. They just need to be able to see that. So it's as much making fun of myself as anything else. Having said that, I had this idea, which I floated in a group I'm in. I got zero response, which told me something. But I thought it was a great idea. I was going to create a list of all the crazy, nutty, wild, weird, and wonderful techniques that exist out there for helping people feel better that you see time and time again. Sorry, just moving. Time and time again in the self-help or self-development, personal development world. You know, it could be anything from as crazy to as normal sounding as you like. And I'm not putting any judgment on any of these, but I must admit the general idea was to look at and maybe make some sort of slightly funny videos about some of the wilder ones, you know, things like astrology or tarot or sound healing or crystals or hypnosis or So those are some of the ones that are a bit more towards the woo-woo end of things. Don't worry if you like those things and you're crisping up, you know, because I will explain that I've done an about turn on all of those. The one that really gets me though is the flowers, back flowers. Don't get me started. And then you've got the stuff that is kind of accepted, you know, hypnosis or even the things which have got official names like sophrology there's various, you know, there's a whole bunch of these things. And many techniques, you know, like nonviolent communication or neurolinguistic programming and coaching even, things like this, you know, they're all techniques. And I wanted to make a list of them and maybe make a video about each one, giving my point of view. And in the context of this funny sort of group where I laugh at people and myself, irreverent, I would be, to be honest, I'd probably be making fun of some of them. I didn't get much of a response. I didn't get any response to the list that I wanted people to help me make. And then I thought to myself, okay, what's going on here? Is it a stupid idea? Are people too embarrassed? They don't want to get involved. They don't want to criticize anything. What's going on? And in this process, I started thinking, hang on a second, I'm not sure this is the route I want to go down. And what I've come to see now about techniques is that for a start, I don't like the idea of techniques. I'm on a kind of anti-label crusade. I don't really like labels of any type. I'm moving away from saying what I am to what I do. There was a time when I was taking on board the idea of not saying what I do, but saying what I am. In other words, believing in so much, such as a coach, believing so much in what I do that it's not even what I do anymore. It's literally, it's become what I am. I can't help be anything but that. The idea is that you're so into it that you're transparent. You're literally, you are the epitome of that thing. But I came to realize that that's like another label, isn't it? You say, I'm a coach. When I did this coaching course, which I gave up, after having done all their lessons and everything, I decided not to do the certification because I didn't like it anymore. It wasn't what I wanted to be labeled as. I didn't want their widely recognized, government-funded, blah, blah, blah certificate. I didn't want it as a label. And I even spent thousands of euros to learn that, which is fine. So I think the person who did this, that particular school, had just written a book, and it was something along the lines of, don't do coaching, be a coach, you know, become a coach in your deepest soul. And that I really liked that idea. I thought, wow, you know, you absorb yourself in the technique. You can't help being a coach, therefore you'll be the best coach ever. I've got against that now, and I want to be more judged by what I do rather than what I say I am. Because you can say you're anything, can't you? But it doesn't mean you are it. And anyway, whose definition of it? You know, a coach is like a teacher, it's like anything. People think when they see the certificate, oh, okay, I know what you are. No, sorry, you're not, because you're a human being, and every human being is so different. How can a piece of paper represent you? But people, they're a bit lost, they need the reassurance. Now you've got that piece of paper which says you studied for that number of years at that school, you've got that qualification, I think I understand what you do and what you are. It doesn't work like that. Humans don't work like that. So I decided to stop that list, not do it, and take another route. So my group, Wannabe Self-Help Guru Recovery Forum, it's kind of for coaches, it's kind of for people who might want coaching. It's for people who want to explore life. It's for people into self-development, not self-help, because I don't believe people need help, perhaps guidance, but help suggests they've got a big problem. Maybe they have, but it's not the approach I want to take. In the positivity sort of arena, we try to take the person at face value and see how where we can go from there to something even better. But we don't assume they've got a problem. Problem by whose definition? With kids, I often see this. The problem that kids are often presented with is actually something imagined, invented, or even sometimes wanted by the parents. And it's the parents who've got the problem. Kids with high potential is a good example, especially here in France. some parents, it's like, you know, suffering for your beliefs. They almost have competitions on how gifted their child is, or how many gifted children they've got. I've seen mothers in a kind of competition, one saying, well, my child is HP, they call it, high potential. And another mother will say, oh, you know what, me too, but I've got two of them. And then another one will say, every single one of my kids is high potential. And it's like a stupid competition. Who's got the most high potential kids? They play on the fact that high potential, or whatever you want to call them, kids that are a bit different or learn differently, are a problem. It's really difficult. They have emotional problems and the rest of it. So they play on that as a reason for saying it. So they're not boasting. But behind that, I'm sure there's a psychological side of it, that it's feeding their ego massively. Because if all your kids are high potential kids or high IQs or whatever system you want to use, it does suggest that you are the person who created kids with high intelligence, therefore you must have a high intelligence. Anyway, it's a kind of a hole, you know, you can go into, delve into. I enjoy delving into these holes and revealing what's, trying to understand what's really going on. So my desire to make fun of any technique at all is fading, because I see them all, any and every technique that can be given a name, as simply a step on the route. I should come back, seeing as I'm blabbering so much, come back and look you in the eye. I see any technique these days as simply a way of, a step on the way to seeing a deeper truth. And that deeper truth has no name. But we'd like to kind of know it. But because we can't give it a name, we give names to halfway houses. But the problem is we fall in love with our halfway houses, our techniques, you know, our hypnosis, our Reiki, our yoga, or our Buddhism, or Christianity, or whatever technique it is you've found, with all its social labels and stigmas and expected behaviors. We fall in love with that, or it takes us over and we're stuck, we're screwed, and we never get to that deeper truth, which it would be nice to get to. The deeper truth, you kind of think that if there is a deeper truth out there about everything that we're part of and why life exists and so on, you kind of think there must be something out there that is true for everybody, irrespective of what technique they've taken on board. But a lot of people don't see it like that, and they cling desperately to the technique that they've fallen on, they really like, does it for them. Or the technique that they had imposed upon them as kids. You know, you're born in this family, it's a such and such religion family, therefore that becomes your religion. Before you know it, because you're highly influenceable as kids and you're trying to keep people happy and feel okay, you forget that you took on board something that isn't necessarily true, and then it becomes your truth and you're unable to see any other truths. Anyway, so there's that. We're still in my week here, aren't we? We're still in 1 week on Earth. So there was that. And the second thing is, I was at this soiree, French soiree, and someone was, a guy, was wanting to help me set up possibly a cabinet, like a consulting surgery, except that's not the right word, in a medical center, because there was this medical center, which he was involved in, with doctors, but there was a place free and I could have gone there. You know, they're not, it doesn't have to be just doctors. It fell through. But anyway, that's the history. This guy, so he's sort of looking into ways in which I could get a cabinet. Now I'm open to the idea, but it doesn't have to be that. And in France, this way of looking at things, you know, being chilled out, you know, yeah, I could go that way if it makes sense, if it seems good, we can try it. But in France, the idea of a profession, you don't play around with it. You don't try it out. You know, that's your profession. You go for it, and you've got the certificate on the wall that proves that that's what you are. Remember? That's what you are. I am a doctor. And there was a funny thing, because he was trying to tell me how, I was going to say share with me, but no, he was telling me what I had to do to lead my profession, in fact, to become successful in his eyes. He doesn't know about everything I do. He just saw this guy who knows his daughter, his wife and his daughter, who have done some English with me, and who wants to find more clients in coaching and looking after, helping kids and their parents who have the kids have learning difficulties. That's what he saw. He thought that was my life. And bless him, he wanted to help me. But he wanted to set me up as this professional. And he said, look, this is how it works in France. He didn't want to hear any doubts from my... He was giving me anecdote after anecdote about people judging others by what they wear. I showed him a certificate that I did, not because I wanted to show the certificate, but because his daughter wanted to see if they gave you a certificate after such and such a course. And I said, yeah, they give you this. And he looked at this and he thought, this was my claim to fame. This was how I sold myself to people. I never show this certificate to anybody. And he jumped on it, and he's a design guy. And he said, okay, look, no, it's too childish, it's too... And he started jumping in to how we were going to redesign my certificate. He was even going to make one for me so that I would fit in with his idea of what a helping professional is in France, so that I wouldn't rock the boat too much if I ever got into one of the medical centres which he was involved in. So I see where it's coming from. And it was all from goodwill and such like. The problem is, apart from the fact that this guy was totally wrapped up in himself, every anecdote, everything he said was designed to show how good he was, the successes he'd had in life, his influence. He drove too fast, but he knew the police guy. He invited people to his enclosure at some race meeting. He this, he that, so there was that. I tried to, to ignore that side of it. But the thing is, what he fundamentally didn't understand. No, at one point he says, when I countered one of his arguments as such, because I wasn't coaching him, it was a discussion, so I countered some of his arguments. He said, at one point he started to speak a little bit louder and a little bit more slowly. He said, no, look, you haven't understood. I'll explain it to you again. It's like when you type and you say, okay, you didn't get what I said, so I'm going to type real slow so you can understand me better. And what he didn't get, he thought he knew what I didn't get, fair enough. What I don't think he got was the fact that the heart of my profession is helping people see more clearly. It's helping people remove the labels that have been stuck on them. This guy was covered in labels. He knew what it was to be a professional in France. He knew what you had to do to get respect, what you had to do to get clients, a certain type of client. He didn't realize that maybe I didn't want those sort of clients. He wasn't seeing things from my point of view. My job is to try and see things from other people's points of view. It's my job. My job is to not conform. I was going to say it's not to conform. It's almost to not conform. It's to be yourself. It's not to follow all these social mores. It's not to kowtow to convention if it's not right for you. In many cases, it's absolutely the opposite. It's to peel off the layers, get rid of these limiting labels and beliefs that have been stuck on you, and forge your own path. Very, very difficult for this well-meaning guy to understand. So that's kind of... those were two things that happened to me this week, and very interesting. We parted as friends, I think, although I'm not sure if he's going to contact me again. Maybe he thinks I'm too much of a contrary character, which may be true. But that's what I tried to do. I tried to show people that they don't have to follow conventional norms all the time. And this guy was ramming them down my throat. He was almost taking me, I'm 53 for crying out loud. He was going to take me under his arm as his sort of protege and create me. He was going to create. He liked the idea of what I do because it sounds a bit different, but we're gonna normalize that difference. Okay, Sab, don't worry, you'll be okay with me. Come along, I'll show you what to do. I'll do your marketing, I'll create your image, I'll tell you what clothes to wear, I'll tell you what to say to people. Then you do your original thing, okay? My Paris metaphor for this week, part two. Now my Paris metaphor is obviously, there we are, very high quality picture of the Eiffel Tower. That's the Eiffel Tower. My Paris metaphor is about Paris. Literally about the town of Paris. I don't know if you know Paris. Paris has, I was looking for a map earlier, I didn't find one that I liked, but I'll try again. So I'm going to share my screen and hopefully you can see what I'm looking at. Yeah, so Paris looks like this. It looks a bit like a P. I call Paris the big P. Like New York is the big apple. And this isn't a very big picture. I was trying to find a bigger one. Maybe this is bigger, yeah. How big is this? Well, it's about that big. Hopefully you can see. Paris started off as the island in the middle, Île de la Cité. It was an island surrounded by the river. That was Paris, even just a bit of it. Then it started to grow, and it got bigger and bigger, and it started to spill over onto the banks. Then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it grew. Every time it grew to a certain size, they built a wall to protect the people. But then it sort of split the wall, or people started building houses on the outside of the wall to be close to Paris. So they would tear down the existing wall and build another one a bit further out. And this happened about 5 or 6 times. It's amazing. That's one thing. But the second thing is that, in fact, now we have a system called the arrondissement of Paris. It's districts. You've got the island in the middle. It's still there, still surrounded by water, protected, if you like, by water. And it looks a bit like a sort of diamond shape, actually. And then they've got these arrondissements. They created these districts. You've got number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And they go out and out and out. Like, and it looks like a snail. It's a snail, a spiral shape. So the original little diamond-shaped island of Paris, surrounded by water, has now been completely encased in all of these arrondissements, these districts. The metaphor is that that's a bit like us. When we grow up, when we're born, we're this kind of diamond, like the Île de la Cité, this perfect little diamond. There's nothing wrong with us. We're innocent. We don't know anything explicitly. We certainly don't know any of society's rules. And we just arrive. We don't even know that we're separate from the spoon they put in our mouths or the walls around us. For us, it's all us, or it's all something, or it's all nothing. It's like this little island surrounded by water. Around about the age of 2, things change. Up until then, everything was accepted. You could do anything you like. You could vomit on your mother. You could plaster your paints all over the walls. It's okay. Oh, look what he did. Oh, dear. He doesn't know any better, you know. He's, oh, look at him. He's trying things out. Along comes maybe 2 or 3 years, and things change. All of a sudden, what you could do without getting shouted at became a shoutable offence. You didn't know that your crayons or whatever, they can go to the edge of the paper, but they can't go further. They can't go onto the wall. That's not the same thing. You can do the paper crayon thing, but you can't do the wall crayon thing. How is a child to know? Well, the child learns. The child is educated. Educated normally, very often, by negative emotions being thrown at it, being shouted at, being, in some cases, let's face it, hit or physically punished in some way. In some cases, in the past, maybe today, maybe in some cultures, maybe not. But anyway, the kid gets a bad feeling. That's the idea. Something unpleasant happens, a punishment, so that the kid won't do it again. The kid wanted to take that crayon and carry on. The crayon, getting those colours out there, producing colour, it's a pure expression, a non-verbal expression of the joy of being alive. What else could it be? Oh, look, it's marvellous, it's marvellous, it's marvellous. But don't you do that. Get that crayon away from my white walls. This starts to happen, and all of a sudden, bam, things aren't so fun. That hurts us. We thought life was fun. Some bits of life aren't fun. So you do whatever it takes. The brain is pretty amazing. The brain tries to survive. It does whatever it takes to avoid those negative feelings. A brain that has negative feelings or feels something bad has fear, a sort of primordial fear for its life. It thinks it might die. The feelings don't necessarily distinguish between a fear of dying and a fear of mummy frowning. There's just this sort of primordial fear, and the brain thinks fear, that's the might die fear, better not do that again. so I don't have that might die fear, so that I will stay alive. And that's just the beginning. Of course, we learn how to eat with a fork. You know, you don't eat with your hands, you eat with a fork, obviously. Well, the kid didn't know that. It seems quite logical to grab a, you know, to grab something with your hands and put it in your mouth. Maybe that's what even the hands are for. But no, not in our society, except there are some societies where they are. Inconsistent. All these fake beliefs, they depend so much on where you grow up as well, and on how your parents are. And then, of course, you don't eat that with your fingers, you eat it with a fork, for crying out loud. And then your parent will take a piece of bread with their hand and put it in their mouth. So, you know, this is pretty complicated. Anyway, you get these things stuck on you, these beliefs, these ways of being you have to adopt, or you will be in danger. And you have to learn them. To be a good child, to be a good boy or a good girl, to make your parents proud, you say thank you, or you say this, or you do that. You wear this when you go out in public. You wear this when you're at home. You do this, you don't do that. At this time you do this, at that time you do that. And so it goes on, with the aim of producing someone who is able to survive, okay, in society. And it may be that society that we have today exists because of these. So I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying we should get rid of them. What I am saying is that little diamond, the perfect you, that wanted to carry on drawing off the paper and onto the walls, has been crushed. But that's who you were. That's what you wanted to do. You wanted to explore the infinite possibilities of life. You learn that that's not necessarily possible if you want to stay safe. And you arrive with the best will in the world. You arrive at adulthood. Your parents have probably tried hard to prepare you for that grim reality. Off you go, your diploma under your arm, shiny and polished, and have a good life. Except that at some point in your life, it can happen earlier or later, it could be in your 20s. Some people have a 20-year crisis now, or 30-year crisis. It used to be midlife crisis, which was around about 40 or 50, but you know, kids have pre-adolescence now, don't they? So around some time in your life, a lot of people, they think, well, I've got it all. I've got all these external symbols of happiness and so on, but I'm not happy. And to cut a long story short, I'm rambling, how to find happiness, they thought it was out there. We thought it was in bigger house, perfect partner, shiny kids, certain amount of money in the bank, social status, etc. And we realized that we've got it and it ain't it. And then we start floundering, looking around. And the thing is, it's inside you. The shining light of that little diamond, which is perfect, has been covered by all of these layers, all of these social norms, these limiting ideas. Yeah, if the kid at school, I had an instance at school where I was drawing and I drew in the wrong way and I got slapped around the head by the art teacher. So I stopped drawing for a long time. And I sort of absorbed this idea that I wasn't a drawer, or I didn't know how to. But that's not true. I had not drawn in the way I'd been asked to draw. You know, it sounds to me like innate, perfect, limitless creativity. But in fact, in the system of how you draw in our society, you go to a drawing class, you do what the teacher asks you, especially at school, and to exaggerate a bit. And if you don't do the assignment you've been asked to do, more or less, then, you know, you can't really be part of the class, because that's what we're doing in this class. And yet, if you do want to do something on your own, you're on your own in many cases. So the thing is, first thing is to realize that all of these layers, all of these districts have been constructed around the perfect little diamond, which is the Île de la Cité. You're inside Île de la Cité, protected by the river. It's still there, but you've lost it. It's in there somewhere. And the thing is not to look for the answer, look for the shining light you desperately want to light up your life out there. We think it's in the next self-help book. It's in the next seminar we can go on. It's on the next webinar we're going to watch. It isn't. It's inside you. Those things can help, but they can only help you to see what's already inside you. And when you break down those layers, when you get rid of all those crap, that crap, those rules of society, the way we do things, which are generally to please others, you will then reveal, once again, the shining light, your inner île de la cité, will shine for all it's worth. Not only will it shine for you, because you will be being yourself at last. That's why I took up art on my own. And now I paint what I want. I don't belong to any school of art. I do what I want, like I wanted to do as a kid in the art class. Bam! That's not art. You're not an artist. Do what I say. Nah. But it takes time. Sometimes it takes guts to do that. Sometimes it takes a realization that that's what's happened, because these things are very subtle. Many people, they live their lives, they go through their lives never questioning, never knowing there are questions to be asked about this. So you've been looking at that picture again, and it's been me talking. Maybe you should have seen me talking. I'm learning slowly how to do these things. So there we are. That's my Paris metaphor. Look on Paris as a metaphor. Île de la Cité is the perfect diamond inside you. It's the real you. It's protected by the river, but it's been covered by crap, like the districts of Paris. I'm not saying the districts of Paris are crap, but you see what I mean. Let's move on to number three, thought provokers. If that wasn't provoking enough, thought provoking enough. I'm going to tell you about a book that I read recently. I rediscovered on my shelves after many years, even decades. It's the second book by the guy who did a book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull, called Richard Bach. And this book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, his first, was a bolt from the blue. I think it was a bit like Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. It changed people's lives. It was simple. It was a parable. In a nutshell, it was a seagull who didn't want to be like the other seagulls. This seagull wanted to fly higher than the rest. He wanted to fly faster than the rest, and he wanted to fly further than the rest. And of course, we don't do that in our seagull flock. So you can see where the story went. In the end, I can't remember, but I think he went further and it was okay or something like that. This is the second book by him, and it's called Illusions. This is very interesting because his first book changed a lot of people's lives. It was very profound, but it was simple. And he, the author, then had to deal with that instant fame, that huge success. And he had to ask himself questions. His book was very spiritual, but obviously things happened with that success that made him want to go further. And this book is the result. You can see it's called The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. To a certain extent, he became a sort of, when you write a book like that, you become almost worshipped by people whom the book has really touched. And his book, Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, it's not him, the reluctant Messiah, but in his story, he is someone who meets a reluctant Messiah, someone who has really seen deep truths and is recognized by the crowd, the masses as that. He gets loads of people following him everywhere, and he gets fed up with it, and he decides to go off and fly an aeroplane. And that's how he meets the author of this book, who also flies aeroplanes. And he becomes his sort of messiah that he learns from. And then inside, part of the story is that I think Richard is going to possibly become the next messiah when this guy goes. And he casually discovers a book of the reluctant messiah guy who's flying planes now, which says something like, Guide to Being a Messiah, or something like that. And throughout the book, we get little quotes from this book. The idea is that you open up the book, there we are, things like this. You open up the book at any given page, and you'll get a message, which may help you to see things more clearly. And it's good, it's fun, it's deep, it's wonderful, it's a really good book, you should read it, Illusions. You know, being into all this self-development stuff and ages and even some sort of spirituality and that, you start to see the same thing again and again. And I was reading this and I was thinking, well, you know, it's all in there. This guy's seen something deep. And it's the same old ideas and truths maybe coming back again and again. You don't have to go very far in a quest for deeper meaning to find people who they all end up talking about the same things, which is reassuring in a way. At some point, you've got to get off the self-help, the self-actualization, realization bandwagon and just go and be yourself and have fun in your life, I think. So that's a kind of trap. But what happens is, the more you find yet another guru and you realize they're saying yet again more or less the same thing, you then find the one who says it in the best, the nicest way, the one that you find coolest, and you follow them for a while. But in the end, you've got to go beyond them all, because they are just steps on the route to some deeper truth, which can only be right for you. You know, your deeper truth won't be exactly the same as my deeper truth, because you haven't lived the same kind of life I have. But you can, in the end, go beyond almost all of these so-called gurus. They can help. They really can help. The best thing, though, is if you start to see some sort of truth that works for you and helps you to be happy right now. So it's a good book. This brings me back to, I said it's the thought provoker section, and that did provoke a thought, in that these little, you're supposed to, I've got books like this, they're full of wise sayings and things. You're supposed to open it up on any given day, at any given page, at random, read it and apply it to your life. Get some sort of wisdom from it. I thought that was cool. But then I realized that I often laughed at some techniques that are actually pretty much the same thing. For example, tarot cards or horoscopes. Those are the two that spring to mind. I'm not talking about reading your future. I really don't go for that at all. But I'm talking about using so-called characteristics of the signs of the zodiac, for example, or a card you take at random, or three cards, or whatever their system is, and getting some wisdom from it. I used to think this was ridiculous, stupid, irrational. And then I started to see all of these techniques as simple stepping stones on the way to some deeper truth. And I started to think, you know what? Actually, they're okay. It doesn't matter what you do. You've just got to help the person get to their deeper truth, a better understanding of what's going on, or more peace in what's going on. If that means talking about a picture on a card, why not? If it means, even if, for example, you say, I'm this sign of the zodiac. Oh, so you're that. Even if the person says, no, I'm not, unless they're really completely in the system and believe every word, which I'm not really into. But even if they say, no, I'm not, I'm more this, that's helped them to think about things more deeply. This sort of thing works well with kids. And I say works well, it almost, you can't do it any other way. They work through symbolism, and they're much better expressing their emotions non-verbally. So for example, this picture, I'm just taking an example at random. I might say to a kid, if I'm trying to get a kid to talk about themselves, I'm not going to say, okay, so today we're going to talk about your emotions, okay? What is the strongest emotion for you? What's your most negative emotion? Or please, you know, they're going to bam, the barriers are going to come down, forget any possible communication, especially deep communication. But what about accessing that in a different way? So what about saying to them, yeah, I'm a painter. If I see them looking at the painting, so I don't even force the painting on them. If they look at it, I might say, do you like that painting? Or what do you think it is? It's generally questions. It's never saying, you know, this is my favorite painting, because that might give them the idea that they have to say that they like it. Otherwise, it'll hurt me. So it's never a case of me giving anything if possible, imposing any expected response on them. So I might say, what do you think of that? I did it when I was just starting to play with colors. This is not imposing a response on them. They can say they like it or they don't. They also get the idea that I like colors, which is a universe apart, isn't it? It's different. It's different from your average adult's universe that you perceive an adult having. I might then say, you know, what's your favorite color? And I might say, what colors do you like in there? And they might say a color. And then I might say, why? Or I might say, what do you think of when you think of that color, the color red? Or whatever. And it might be, I think of love. Oh, okay. Why do you think of love? And they might say, I think of the heart symbol. Or they might say, because my mum always wears a red pullover at Christmas. And you're starting to pull out emotions. And so coming back to this, I'm okay with these little snippets from this wise book that are supposed to make you think of stuff. Because it's like what I'm doing now. It's not what I'm saying that's important, although I hope what I'm saying is interesting. And I try to make the thing in itself worthwhile and make you think. But it's not that that's really important that comes out of my mouth. It's what happens when it goes into your consciousness, when it hits you. What does that stir in you? That's what's important. So if it's a tarot card or a horoscope sign that makes people talk about themselves, why not? If it's colors, I can never get the image right. If it's colors, then why not? They might say, when I think of hearts, they might say, I think of my mum. And I might, so that tells me, okay, you think of your mum, but not your dad. I might say, does your dad have a colour? Or what other colours do you like? What do you think of when you think of purple? They might say, well, I think of my dad because he's weird, like purple or whatever, you know? So it's a way of getting people to talk more easily without imposing, just offering, trying to enter into their universe. That's what this guy that I talked about at the beginning was unable to do. He was unable to enter into my universe. He had his universe. This is what a serious professional is in France. You want to play the game? And he kind of implied, you want my help? I've got my reputation to think of. So it's great what you're doing. It's great, as long as you do it my way. We have to do things their way, or they won't be able to take on board what we're saying or what we're trying to show them. That's a really important lesson I learned this week, or the week before, from someone wise, one of these guys, you know, who is a wise person that I still listen to regularly, because there's always gems to pick up. And they said, this person said, you might not like the technique that such and such a person has found. That might not be your thing. I had someone recently, their latest thing that they'd found, which was going to solve all their problems. You dive into your past and you go back through some, I don't know, energy guy or generational healing, whatever, or magnetizer. And apparently this guy had gone back 8 generations with her, and he'd found that 8 generations ago, someone in the family had committed suicide. You know, trickled all the way back down to her or whatever. So, you know, some of these things work for me, some of them don't. But what I'm learning is not to criticize that. If she did a session with this generational healer guy, if it worked for her, who am I to say that it didn't work as well as she thought it did? Who am I to say that? And what will that do for me in her eyes? I will become someone who criticizes something that was good for her. How is she going to hear the good things I might be able to say to her if the barriers have already gone down? It's damn hard not to call bullshit on some techniques. It really is. But for all I know, it's not bullshit. That's my perceived thinking. That's my limiting beliefs. And I have to hold my hands up and admit it. And it hurts to admit it, because some things I really do think are bullshit. But if you take the technique away, you take what you do in the technique away from the technique, and you say, it's a technique that helps people open up, that helps people see more clearly. If you didn't even tell me, if you said, I've got this technique, it really helped me to understand why I do certain things better. What technique was that? Don't tell me. That will ruin it. The technique doesn't matter, actually, if it has helped people. That's the thing. That's what I'm starting. I'm starting to see that as a deeper truth. And I like that. Techniques are techniques, but there's more than that. And try not to criticize people's techniques, because everybody's got techniques, including me. I've even got to the point where I realized that things like, if you turn the music off when you see people dancing on TV, you turn the music off. They look like they're having epileptic fits. If you analyze music itself, it's people making funny noises with funny objects, or playing with their voice in a strange way, not normal talking. Why are they going up and down with their voice? It could be seen as utterly ridiculous, and yet I spend a huge amount of my life not dancing, that would not be pretty. Not making music, although I'm coming to that in a second, that would also not be pretty. But listening to people making funny noises, that's just as ridiculous as someone thinking that their future can be seen in the stars. It's just as ridiculous, or it's just as amazing. It's my thing. If it's not yours, that's fine. If the stars are your thing, that's fine. It's not mine. The thing is, stepping back from all that and seeing the bigger picture. If it helps other people, and a psychologist said this to me once, her approach was, if it helps other people, good. Doesn't hurt anyone. It helps them. Good. And shut your mouth. Who are you to say that such and such a technique isn't useful to somebody else? You can't. That was my thought provoker. A creative selection. We hardly have any time. Now, I must just say here, if you are watching this replay, I want people to come along. I want this to be interactive. It's not so far because people don't know about it. Or maybe they've heard about it and said, no way, not with him. But I'm hoping that there are some people out there somewhere who would like to take part in this. So I want it to be interactive. I will present a topic for maybe 5 minutes. We talk about it for 5 minutes. I'll present another topic for 5 minutes. We talk about it for 5 minutes. That's what I want. Not just me, blah, blah, blah. It helps me. If you're watching the replay, hopefully it'll help you. But I would like more interaction. My next section is, so that was in French, provocateur de pensée, so thought provokers. My next section is, which will be quick, une sélection créative, creative selection. It's what I've done recently. Let me show you. I'm going to share my screen with you again. And I'm going to share this. This is a picture of me with the book. It's kind of cool because Illusions, the book is Illusions. I think maybe you know that every 10 days as part of my creative Paris When Lady Eiffel Smiles series of pictures and text, every 10 days I do a sort of self-portrait in order to show you me disintegrating creatively, hopefully. It's not supposed to be an ego thing, although obviously it is a bit, but it literally is to see the passing of time in a creative way. I like this. Okay, it's Illusions, but there's a reflection, there's a slight reflection of my face in the book, which is kind of nice, like a mirror, and saying everything is an illusion. You might think that the illusion of me is in the reflection of the book, but it's also an illusion of me on the left side, because that's just pixels on a screen, isn't it? Bits of light, that's an illusion. So there's that. Did I write anything interesting with that? Well, of course I did, but I won't go into that. Yeah, I'm talking about dreams. I find it a very interesting article. I'd like you to read it. You can find that on all my creative sites and Infinity Coaching on the Facebook page and so on, talking about life, the universe and everything. This one is nice. Now this one is, I say it's nice, it's my son. What do you want me to say? And it's this little boy and he's jumping up and down. I asked him, this was his 9th birthday, and had a kind of strange moment recently. For me, there's two very significant moments in life. One is when you realize that your kid is an age that you can remember being. Because you can't remember your first years. But he was 9 last week. It was his 9th birthday a few days ago. And I remember being 9. It was a very significant birthday for me because I was abroad for the first time. My mum had said to me on the way home from school, hey, do you want to go on holiday? Do you want to go and live in Australia for a year? Wow, my dad swapped jobs. And I said, yeah. In my 9th birthday, I was en route for Australia, and I was in Singapore. This was his 9th birthday. And it sends a shiver through you. I don't exactly remember being that little boy, but I look at my son and I think, that was me. And, you know, even hear the old voice cracking up there. You know, it does something to you, that's for sure. The other moment is, when I reached the age that I remember my parents being. So when I was 40, I remembered my parents being 40. And I tried to imagine, were they at that age feeling what I'm feeling now? And very recently, I had a very touching, shocking almost, it's not the word. My mother said they're moving to the Lake District. It's a beautiful, mountainous and lake-ridden, lake-filled district of Britain. I finally decided, why are we living in a big city? We like going on holiday there. Let's go and live there. And my mum said, we'd like you to come and visit us as often as you can, because this will doubtless be our last 10 years. And that hit me. Mortality hit me. Their last 10 years, you know, without saying before we die, that's it, isn't it? Our last 10 years before we die. And it brings it home to you. It does bring these things home to you. One day, if I'm lucky, I will make it to that age. I did I did an article on that, of course, but I also, which was more about my son, but then I did one of my memes. And this is going back to the things we cover ourselves with, these layers of crap. And it says, the gift of enlightenment is in high demand these days. The crazy thing is, we've already got one. We've got an enlightenment. It's hidden under another wonderful present we got as kids, endarkenment. I find this useful, a useful way of looking at it. I invented the word endarkenment. Don't know if anyone else has used it. We so often look for the light, I think I mentioned it, the light to brighten our lives from outside. It's not, it's inside, it's just covered. Before enlightenment, if you can guess it from the word, we were endarkened. And we need, it's very useful if we see things that way. It's been useful for me anyway, because I've realized that if I want to shine, I need to shine from the outside, from the inside out. I want that little diamond, I have to uncover that diamond and let it sparkle. We've been endarkened before we can even hope to be enlightened. That's why we need to be enlightened, because we've been endarkened. If we hadn't been endarkened as kids, we wouldn't need to be enlightened. Kids, when they're born, are as close to enlightenment as we could ever hope to become. Then we learn stuff. And then sometimes we decide that we need to unlearn all that stuff to get closer back to what we really are. Other photos I've done this week. This was in a cemetery, part of a memorial thing for the 100 years of the Second World War, the end of the First World War. I did a strange text that goes with that, playing with words. And this is great. Look at this. My series is called When Lady Eiffel Smiles. So quite regularly in my series, I do pictures of the Eiffel Tower. And my artistic objective is never to do a photo of the Eiffel Tower that is any like any other I've ever taken, or that anyone else has ever taken. Big ambitious goal, but well, why not? I don't want to do stuff like other people. I love this. Look, I've played around with it, obviously. The idea that, I don't know, it made me think that the Eiffel Tower there on the surface of the earth is a bit like a body lying and one little hair sticking up into the air. It's so insignificant compared to the vastness of the sky. And yet there it is. We think that that little hair, or us as little people sticking up off the vertically off the surface of the planet, or our little structures like the Eiffel Tower, are so important. It's so amazing. It was the tallest man-made structure in the world until they built another one. But these are all just little hairs, aren't they, sticking up on the surface of our little bodies, trying to touch something other than us. But we're part of everything else. We don't even need to try. I did this thing about advertising. Don't have time to go into that. I was making fun of advertising, that we're surrounded by, starting off by saying how wonderful it is. We learn all about, you know, latest fashions and makeup and all the wonderful drinks we can try and the electronic gadgets. And then I turned it around. The article looks like this. It's got two parts to it, you see. Where is it? It looks like that. In the first part, I was doing that, saying how wonderful it is. And then I was saying, no, of course I was joking. Makeup teaches us to cover our ugly faces. Airbrushed models remind us how utterly imperfect we are and how we can never be like that. But try anyway by buying this thing. Drink? Oh yeah, a party isn't a party with this wonderful drink. They're brainwashing us into thinking that to buy their poisonous substance, alcohol, we need to enjoy ourselves. We need that. No, it's the company that we enjoy, which is supposed to be helped, oiled by the booze. But they try and make us think that the booze, if you need booze, but the booze, a party isn't fun without their booze. So we're all drug addicts. And the electronics, you know, marvelous. Be even more productive, blah, blah, blah. Get more done in less time. What are we doing? We're spending the most of our lives in front of screens and camera lenses. Hello. So there was that. And then finally for this week, there was this one. That's part of the La Petite Ceinture. It's the little ring road, the ring rail that used to go around Paris. It's marvelous. My son and I love investigating the remains of it. And I saw a metaphor, again, for life in this. The text I wrote was, this train line doesn't work anymore. One day your train will pull into the final station. The rails will rust over and flowers will cover the sleepers. Have a great trip. I put the lines two by two like the rails of a train line. The train will pull into the final station. The rails will rust over and the flowers will cover the sleepers. I had to explain this in the French version of this webinar, that sleepers are both the big solid lumps of wood that go underneath the rails to support them. And a sleeper, well, it's someone who's sleeping, isn't it? And it's a kind of poetic way of talking about people who have died, the sleepers, and flowers covering them, throwing flowers on their graves. The final station is the end of the line, folks. Have a great trip is me trying to grab you back from the brink of jumping off the nearest railway bridge and saying, you know, well, enjoy the trip, man. Get off at a few of the stations on the way. See what you find. That's what it's about. You don't know which station will be your final station, luckily. We know there's an end to the line, but we don't know how long the line is or how many stations there are along the way. So make sure you get off at every station and have a look around. That's what I say. I'm going to finish now with quirks and curiosities. That was a creative selection. Let me come back to you. That was a creative selection. Gone slightly over an hour. Sorry. That was a creative selection that alludes to my pictures, my art, which is called Infinity Squared. They all look like that. It's a big metaphor for life, in case you want to check my art out. Infinity2.com. Infinity2.com. I've got just going to throw in a curiosity. This is Quirks and Curiosities in French, that says. And what have I found? I'm going to take up music. I've tried every instrument. I've bought expensive keyboards. I've bought guitars, flutes, the works. Harmonicas never made it past the first few notes because I've got the patience and the attention span of a flea. I discovered an instrument. I think it's going to be it. I love music. It's my life. More than almost anything else I do, music is me almost. I've never had the patience to learn. I think whenever I'm making horrible sounds, I could be listening to someone's wonderful sounds. But, you know, I've always wanted to create something music-wise. I discovered this instrument the other day. It can be a meditative instrument, or it can be a musical instrument for making real tunes. It's simple. It sits on your lap, and it sounds like this. So check this out. I've bought one by internet. You will maybe be hearing something. I mean, you hit it. It's metallic. You hit it and it makes a musical bong. Great. You can't go wrong. So it's like a drum, but it's a musical drum. You hit it in different areas and it makes different notes. So you can just bim, bong, dong, blah, blah, in a kind of meditative state. Could be good for meditating or for reflecting or for just sitting by a river or a waterfall. But there are proper notes, so you can do proper tunes as well if you want. And then it's up to you how you play with your hands to get all sorts of rhythms and different parts of it sound different ways. Fantastic, I'm so excited about it. And it sounds like this. Check it out, I'll play you a few seconds so you'll see what's coming up later in a few weeks when I've got my hands on one. All right, so I'm gonna share my screen with you and I'm gonna try and find it. And it sounds something. It looks like that, and it sounds like this. I hope you can hear it. Here we go. they're marvellous. Gorgeous. Thanks, man. Brilliant. So that's what I've got myself. That's going to be my new toy. Can't wait to get my hands on it. Oh my God, it's going to be amazing. And just going to move me to that next level of spirituality, folks. I make fun of spirituality, and that's because I believe in it so much that there's so much more to life than is on the surface. But part of that's humor. So if you can't laugh at yourself, what can you do? Laughter is one of the purest ways of expressing happiness. And laughter comes from fun. Laughter comes from anomalies. Laughter comes from spotting inconsistencies or silliness. So I laugh at spirituality because I love it. You know, it's a love affair. The two go hand in hand. I did have a sixth section, which is called questions and responses. I should call it questions and reactions. I think that's what I need to call it, because I don't like questions and answers, because I don't have your answers. Sorry, I have opinions, but I don't have solutions or answers. Only you can have those. So I might change that to questions and reactions. That's cool. But I will start discussing questions that I've discovered, all the people have asked me, probably, especially as people come along and we start interacting. But maybe it'll just happen naturally. Maybe I don't need to have a section called questions and responses. That's been me. Do find me. Do encourage your friends to come if you're watching the replay. You can find me on the internet, of course. I'm primarily publishing all my latest stuff on the Infinity. Let's get rid of that. On the Infinity Coaching webpage, but that's less interactive than the wannabe self-help guru recovery forum. I put all the same stuff, but it's more interactive. You can interact and you can put your own stuff as well in a non-commercial way. So that's the main way. You can look at my website, which is called Infinity Coaching. That's the page where if you go to webinars, you get links to the next webinar that's coming up. It's normally a Saturday or a Sunday. Watch out for that. Encourage people to come along. You've got all of the replays here. You see, this is number 5 today. There they are. And so far, it's really just been me. So I'd like more people to come along. Doesn't matter. It's okay. I develop my thoughts as I discuss them with you. Imagining that there's an audience. I'd like an audience. That'll change the atmosphere. That's true. We'll see what happens. Maybe I need to do two. I need to do my own reflecting on my own, which I then share with you. Because when it's interactive, that'll change a lot. And there's a place for both, certainly. Do get involved. And I think that's it. Yeah, I did want to just say about this thing that I've created here. I've created it for a salon that I'm doing. Bien-être, I call it, well-being salon. It lasts for a day in the town near me. And I created this big poster. So I'm trying to create. Even if the guy who wanted to make me as a self-helpy type person would have about 50 things that is wrong with this, I've already seen some of my own. It's there. I did it. It exists. It's okay. Now let's get on with enjoying life. See you next time, everyone. It's been a pleasure talking at you, on about things. I do love that. There's a time for reflection as well. I hope if you've watched this, I will have stirred some reflections in you, which is all I can hope for, all I can hope for. And there'll be more of the same next week. Bye-bye for now, my friends. Bye-bye.